Thank you. The 10 ox herding pictures are a pictorial representation of the path of Zen. In the 10 pictures, it usually shows a young man who is looking for, who eventually finds, tames, and transcends an ox. With the final picture is called In the World, where it shows not a young man, but a fat, happy monk. The fat, happy monk who goes from place to place, living his faith, doing good deeds, always doing the appropriate thing at the appropriate time in the world, with a heart of compassion. Now, in the 10 ox herding pictures, the ox symbolizes the mind. So what the 10 ox herding pictures do not show, however, is the prequel to the pictures. Why is the young man looking for an ox in the first place? Well, he's unhappy. Why am I so unhappy, he says. Why am I so frustrated? Why am I not getting what I want out of life? So he goes to his Zen master. The Zen master says that his mind is clouded. His perception is clouded. His mind is telling a story to himself about himself that isn't real. His mind is telling him this unhealthy narrative. His mind is telling himself that he needs attachments and things to make himself happy. And although these things and attachments might make him happy, might be fulfilling over the short term, over the long term, they're not that satisfying. And the Zen master says that to be truly happy, to be truly free in the world, you need to first look for, train, and ultimately transcend your deluded mind. That's how you be happy and free in the world. Now, I'm not going to talk about all 10 pictures. I'm just going to talk about a few. The first picture shows the young man looking for an ox. It's entitled, Seeking the Ox, and he can't see it anywhere. He looks around, no ox. It's nowhere to be found. What is this ox they're talking about? The second picture is called Discovering Footprints. I see the tracks. I see the footprints. But there's some problems. There's not just a few footprints. There are a lot of footprints. And they're everywhere. There's more trouble because he goes home and he sees that all the tracks are all over his front yard. All over his front yard. But there's still more trouble. Because he reaches down, he puts his fingers in the tracks, and he realizes these tracks aren't fresh. They've been there for a very, very long time. They've been baked into the ground, fossilized into the ground upon which he walks. Why haven't I noticed this before? He says. For the purposes of this teaching, the tracks, instead of representing the imprints of our deluded mind on everything that we think about and do in our lives, the tracks for this teaching could be said to represent privilege, white privilege, the supremacy of a dominant narrative. In the subsequent pictures, the young man eventually tames and finds the ox and tames it. But I want to skip to the seventh picture, which is called The Ox Forgotten. And in this picture, it usually shows the young man sitting quietly looking at the moon in a cloudless sky. The young man has transcended his deluded mind to see things finally as they are. He sees the moon without the clouds obscuring it. Now, in an effort to reduce complexity and add stability to our lives, our minds like to label and categorize and conceptualize things just because it's easier for our minds to think that way. We talk about things as being good or bad, Republican and Democrat, religious, secular, real news versus fake news. And we don't really know exactly what that means, but we categorize things. That's what our mind does. When we do this, we add a thin, sometimes not so thin, layer of conceptualization that separates us from reality. This labeling and conceptualization adds a thin layer that separates us, who we are, to the rest of the world, reality. This is the natural workings of the mind. We communicate with one another with our individual labels that we've come up with, our own concepts and labels and categories. We can try to communicate with other people, yet we have no agreements about what my label means to you and what your labels, maybe the same word, mean to me. Educator Dorsey Armstrong says that postmodern philosophers, and I would say Zen practitioners as well, believe that, quote, language and human communication are inherently complicated. Meaning is endlessly delayed and deferred. And the only way that two speakers can actually ensure that they understand each other is to be inside each other's minds. The point here is that language, although it's what we have to work with, that's undeniable, although it's what we have to work with, needs to be transcended, like the ox forgotten. To get beyond that, because sometimes the language that we use isn't helpful. And the results can be confusing because our labels actually have different meanings amongst us. And actually, they don't reflect reality either. They're that layer that separates us from the way things actually are. Especially words and phrases that we've talked about today. Racist, racism, white supremacy, white privilege. And for many, what complicates it, for many of us, these words, phrases change over time. And it depends on your age also about how you feel about some of these words and phrases. So when we talk about difficult things like race, when we work to see, understand, and tame these things for the first time, do yourselves a huge favor. Don't get caught up. Don't get caught up in the labels and the language. It's not about that. Don't get caught up in the labels and language. Don't get caught up in somebody else's binary definition of a term. I've talked about that over the last 2 weeks, binary definitions of things, Christianity, faith. Don't get caught up in somebody's binary definition of something. Get beyond that. Words obscure the nature of true reality. So back to the young man who was first discovering the tracks. Now, we simply can't be aware of everything all the time. Our mind won't allow it. Our mind can't hold it all. So you really can't blame the young man for not seeing the tracks in the first place. There's no blame here. There's no blame. You can't blame a fish for the water in which it swims. And although the water in which I swim in might seem fine to me, because it's the only water I've ever known, it might be toxic to others. Although the water in which I swim might be fine to me, I might not notice that it's actually slightly toxic even to me, and it's affecting me as well. What if there were better water elsewhere? What if there were healthy water elsewhere in which we could all swim? Might that better water be worth finding? I believe so. It takes courage for me to investigate the possibility of new waters, to give up what I know, because I've just heard that there's better waters elsewhere. Well, this fall, I'm going to begin to look for better waters. This fall, we are going to offer an adult enrichment class called Living the Pledge that Leanne is going to talk briefly about in a few moments. And it's my hope that this curriculum will lovingly help us see the supremacy of a dominant narrative in which we live, the waters in which we swim. And I hope you have the courage to join me in this. Like the hero's journey that I mentioned last week in last week's sermon, the hero's journey, it's going to involve some sacrifice. There's going to be bumps in the road, and there might be some scarring. That's part of the hero's journey. But I promise you that you will also have helpers, also part of the hero's journey. You'll have helpers who will be with you every step of the way, who have nothing but your best interests at heart. That I'm promising you. On this Living the Pledge journey, here's what else I'll promise you. Although it's going to be done lovingly, we will be using language, yes. So the opportunity exists, it will happen, that we will get misinterpreted, misunderstood. I'm guaranteeing that will happen. So what I'm going to ask you on this Living the Pledge journey that we take, to assume best intentions. The folks who will be leading this workshop are going to be trying to do their very best. Assume best intentions. The ultimate goal here, however, is not to see the tracks, to see the water, to see white privilege. If that were the end game, just to see your own white privilege, I wouldn't support it. Because that can't be the end. That's just seeing things as they are. But we need to get beyond that. Because just seeing the privileges is picture number two in the Oxfording pictures. We need to get past that to be that fat, happy monk in the world who sees things as they are, but then actually does things in the world with a heart of compassion, always doing the right thing at the right time. That's where we need to go. And as Kate was talking about our mission, that's part of our mission. To create truth and justice, to find an open-ended search for truth and justice, both within our walls and beyond. That's what we need to do this work. So again, I hope you have the courage this fall to take this Living the Pledge hero's journey with us all.
Spirit of life and love, dear God of all nations, we have so much work to do. We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy. Help us hold fast to our vision of what can be. May we see the hope in our history, and may we find the courage and the voice to do the constant work of rebirth to bring about justice and freedom. That is our dream. Amen. Those are the words of Reverend Bill Sinkford. He was former president and current co-president of the UUA. So, my friends, here we are together. Are you nervous? I'm kind of nervous. And honored. I am honored and humbled that we, as a faith, have been given so many chances to get this right, and we are still here with yet another try. I am grateful that our UU siblings of color are still willing to do this work with us together. So what is this work? What is our vision of what can be that we might need help holding fast to? How many of us already feel like we are doing the work of dismantling white supremacy on some level? Okay. How many of us feel like we don't have a clear understanding of what this work means? How many of us get a little irritated or mad when that phrase, this work, comes up because we don't really understand what is expected of us? So I'm a little of all three on any given day. So please let me share with you a couple of visions of what it could look like to move more deeply into doing the work of dismantling white supremacy on a very personal and a community-based level. So some of you know that my previous congregation was the First UU Church of Richmond, Virginia. In December of 2014, as we crept up on the 50th anniversary of Selma, we had a really powerful worship service where we were asked to make a personal pledge to dismantling the racism that exists when it occurs in ourselves, our communities, or our friends and family. It was called the Richmond Pledge to End Racism, based on the famous Birmingham Pledge. And hundreds of members got up and walked forward and literally signed a pledge. And then we all looked at each other like, okay, now what? So then there was a workshop. It was created by two women from the congregation, one black and one white, where we worked together to figure out how we could live the actions of this pledge that we'd all signed. The workshop is called Living the Pledge. It is beautiful and powerful and imperfect, and it's working. It spans about 12 hours total. There is work into our own internal biases. There is a breakdown of what microaggressions are and how they play out all the time right here in our churches. And we role-played what we can say and do when we see them happening. We did deep spiritual work in small groups with facilitators and occasional affinity group caucusing to make space for healing. And the resources to do this workshop are available to us. Another vision is the enormously successful work of Safety Pin Box, which was created in the wake of the presidential election. While so many of us were reeling, two black women, one of whom is UU's very own Leslie Mack, got straight to work, and they created a monthly subscription box for people who want to be more effective allies for racial justice. And after compensating themselves, the rest of the proceeds go to Black Women Being, and they've given over $50,000 this year. Some of the tasks for this white supremacy teach-in come from Safety Pin Box, and they're preparing to release material designed for people to work together in groups. So we have these resources available to us, which have the added benefit of putting money directly into the hands of black women activists and therefore into black communities. So there is a vision of us doing the work and putting our money where our mouths are. Neither of these steps are perfect. I've done both, and it is hard. And every time I feel like I've left behind the naivety that came with being raised by very good intentioned parents to try to be colorblind while also having zero meaningful relationships with anyone of a different race until I was an adult, more painful layers are peeled back and I feel all the feelings. Shame, guilt, anger, remorse, and then I have support. Because we're not doing this work alone. You build a community of people who are also doing this work. And through it, I'm able to do better because I'm more aware. And that is the vision that I hold fast to, that we as members of this faith can wade into this work together with the faith that it will help us do better, have more meaningful relationships, and stop unintentionally hurting people. And that we will do this work while trying to manage our expectations of perfection or painlessness. It's messy, vital work. And I am proud and nervous and honored to wade in with all of you. And that is our dream.
I'd like you to join me in the spirit of meditation. So get comfy. Close your eyes if you're willing. Be aware of your breath in, aware of your breath out. Be aware of your body. Release tensions. Be aware of your heart. Open your heart. Notice the tenderness of your heart. Be aware of your emotions, holding in compassion, smiling, easing, releasing with breath. Notice your own suffering of injustice. Be aware. Notice how it manifests in your body, in your emotions. Hold this suffering in compassion. Ease your suffering with your breath. Be aware of this suffering as a pattern in the world. Visualize how it affects many people. Take in this pattern of suffering. Hold it in compassion. Send ease. Wish for relief. Notice the suffering of marginalized people. What are you aware of? Feel in your body. Feel your emotions. Hold in compassion. Send ease and relief in your mind. Return to the awareness of your breath. Ease, release tension. Notice suffering of privileged people. See the guilt, disconnection, shame, anger. Feel this energy. Holding compassion, release, ease, send relief. Notice what came up for you during these moments. Breathe, ease, and release. Coming from the awareness of this morning, what are your deepest intentions for addressing the suffering of injustice? What step might you take? How does this feel in your body, in your emotions? What are you carrying forth from this morning? When you're ready, take a deep breath, come back to the room. Thank you. I offer an second invitation to anyone today to stay after service. We realize that we've invoked many thoughts and feelings in today's service. If you would like to stay to share and contemplate your reflections, we will hold space for those wanting to be listened to. If you would like more information on actions you can take, we will have resources to offer you. Thank you.